WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at fairtoflare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and I'm talking the main events of WrestleMania 20 with Mitch from Pizza Body Slam. Mitch, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. And the main event that we're talking about, of course, pretty famous one, is World Heavyweight Champion Triple H against Shawn Michaels and Chris Benoit, the first time ever a triple threat match headlined WrestleMania. I guess the only time it was ever the final match at WrestleMania, and at least so far. And obviously a classic, you know, one of the great stories of the time. I was really invested in it at the time, you know, because of Benoit being my favorite wrestler and, you know, the kind of the story of him finally being able to, you know, climb to the top and become champion after, so much time and, you know, having been, you know, he was basically my favorite wrestler at least one of the very top favorite wrestlers for, 7-8 years at that point. So, just a tremendous, investment and, you know, one of the last times I really cared about, you know, wanting someone to win a championship and, you know, the championship changing hands, I guess just kind of a leftover from my youth a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, story has now become much less fun because of, you know, everything that happened later with Benoit. But, at the time, very much fun.
Yeah, very, very much so. And you have to mention the Benoit thing. You just can't not mention it. It's not possible. It's largely a part of what wrestling is, or why wrestling is what it is now. And it is, you know, like for a long time afterwards, it was uncomfortable to watch Chris Benoit in any form. So, but it's been a while, and yeah. This match was really good.
Yeah. I've sort of gotten past that where I can enjoy the matches and can kind of enjoy the art form and separate it from the artist, so to speak, you know, which is, I think, harder in wrestling because obviously, you know, Chris Benoit, the man, and Chris Benoit, the wrestler, you know, are very much the same in a lot of ways. So it's not like listening to a piece of music by somebody who's a scumbag. I mean, it's obviously different from that, but
yeah, more serious, but
yeah, exactly. But, but I still, you know, I can enjoy the stories he told and I can appreciate what a tremendous wrestler he was. And he really was a tremendous wrestler. Yeah. And I can understand people who can't, who just can't get past it. And that, you know, that's, I don't think, you know, either way is wrong. It just depends on, you know, if you're able to compartmentalize, whatever that word is, or whether you can't, or, you know, or not willing to, or whatever. So, but as far as, yeah, basically the build here was, Benoit had won the 2004 Royal Rumble. He was on SmackDown and then decided that he would challenge for the Raw title instead of the SmackDown title. So he moved over to Raw and challenged Triple H, who was the champion at the time. But then Shawn Michaels and Triple H were in the midst of, you know, of another stage of their very long feud. And it's kind of interesting to, like, look at this match from the perspective of the very long time Shawn and Triple H story, because that's obviously one of the important stories, you know, at least, you know, in the 2000s in WWE, certainly.
It is for sure. That was a big part of it, is that Shawn interrupted the contract signing that Benoit and Triple H were having because he wanted to settle what was, you know, a lengthy feud that he's been having with Triple H. I remember at the time watching it and, you know what, I might even just read about it, because this was like a time in wrestling where I was more interested in reading results than watching wrestling. I feel great shame about that. That is the thing I'm very much against right now, or at least I want to call people out on and be like, if you're not watching it, like, why do you care? But I remember feeling like cheated when Sean kind of stuck his nose into the title picture, or into the title match. And I don't know how I feel now, because I think him being in the match definitely helped the match, which we'll get to.
Yeah, definitely.
And having the story with Triple H there added to the story of the actual match itself too. And we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Mm-hmm, definitely, yeah. I was sort of basically in the same boat. I mean, I was watching certainly some. I was watching Raw at least, but I was definitely. I don't think I was watching SmackDown very much. And you know, and honestly, you know, I agree with you to a certain extent that, you know, obviously you can't just follow wrestling by reading results, but at the same time, there's so much wrestling on television every week, and to keep up with it and watch the classic stuff and watch the independent stuff, I mean, it is certainly hard to keep up. So I can understand somebody who keeps up through results and through recaps. And like, I think there's certainly, you know, that can't be maybe your exclusive way, certainly, but it's certainly, you know, it's sometimes just you can learn a lot by doing that, and you know, it saves time, certainly. So
your brain has a certain capacity for wrestling, no matter how much you want to accept it or not.
Exactly.
And I'm totally, like, it's a great idea to watch what you feel like watching and not feel like you have to keep up on it like it's homework or something.
Exactly.
And reading results is a good way to keep up, or just watching the show. They recap you enough that you can keep up with the story, and the story doesn't change so rapidly.
Sure.
But I guess I more meant that I wasn't watching wrestling, and this was more like the kind of person who would read about it and comment on it and just be like, well, stupid.
Right, yeah. No, there's definitely a fine line. Like, I can see even myself being that kind of person occasionally, you know, just being like, you know, well, like, I have these strong opinions, but I'm not really watching it. I'm just more like, I'm, you know, reading the commentary or following the results. And like, I, you know, I can, and you can understand a certain amount from that, but yeah, there's no substitute for, you know, for watching it and paying attention to it even, you know,
is
pretty important too.
Intervention, Jason, this is about you, and you need to stop this.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you being there for me. So, you know, in the setup, I guess it's pretty simple. I mean, you know, they didn't run a whole lot of angles. I mean, they kind of had Triple H and Evolution teaming on Benoit and, Michaels, kind of the idea that, you know, Benoit and Michaels couldn't really get along and get their act together, because it's tough when you have the heel champion and the two babyfaces challenging him in the triple threat dynamic. You know, it's like you almost kind of feel sympathy for the heel in some respects, you know, if you're not careful. So they obviously have to wedge a divide between them, you know.
I think they played it really well, at least in the start of the match and everything. Like, it seemed like the story was who gets to beat on Triple H, like, who gets to be the guy to beat him up and get the win on him, because that's the most important thing.
Right.
And at that time, like, Triple H was pretty much the biggest prick in all of wrestling anybody. So it was hard to feel sympathy for Triple H. And I think it's a well done story.
Yeah, I agree. And that first sequence where basically Benoit and Triple H, or excuse me, Benoit and Michaels are fighting over, you know, who gets to go after Triple H. They do some really cool reversals and just some really nifty stuff. Like, I don't think they really had a big singles match. If, you know, I mean, they might have had a televised one, but I don't think they ever had a pay-per-view match.
No, I don't think so.
So that's, yeah.
Someone could maybe chime in and fix that for us, but
too late for that. You know, I mean, obviously, like, everyone, you know, pretty much the world knows what happened with Benoit, but I just imagine, like, someone who, like, stopped watching wrestling in 2005 or something, and then, like, just, like, was like, oh, what's on wrestling, and, like, wonders what happened to the guys, and was like, oh, I wonder what happened to Chris Benoit, and then would, like, find out by that, or someone who was in a coma or something, and, you know, so.
Maybe Vince McMahon. I wonder if he knows what happened to him.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was dead then too. So, you know, so.
Oh man, just such a weird turn of events that we don't need to talk about anymore.
No, but
throw up in my mouth.
Yeah. And then after they fight for a while, and then Triple H kind of saunters in and sort of beats them up separately, and then Benoit gets thrown out, and then we have the first Triple H Michaels sequence. And you obviously, like we said, Shawn and Triple H's story, one of the biggest feuds. I mean, obviously they were together in DX when, Shawn did his big comeback. He of course, the big feud with Triple H won the title from him briefly. Then they kind of reintroduced it in late 2003 after about, it was a year, fairly dormant anyway. And they had I think a really classic, or what I've heard but yet to have seen, a really classic match at like at the end of 2003 on Raw, and then they had a Last Man Standing match at the Royal Rumble 2004, which ended in like a, I think both of them were like a double 10 count kind of thing. So
Yeah, that was the draw. And that was most famous for that stacked table ladder bump that Sean took. And like
oh
that
no.
you see a million. Isn't that the same one?
No, that's the Armageddon 2002 match where that was the Three Stages of Hell match where Michaels lost the title back to Triple H. That
I
was
knew
about
I could
a year
count on
before.
you. If I'm ever out of line, I knew I could count on you for jumping in with something. So if I ever.
That's okay. I just happened to watch the match a few months ago, or a few
Oh,
days
okay.
ago. So I mean, I probably would have, I probably knew that anyway, but yeah, I happen to know that because of that. So yeah, I've never seen either of those Triple H HBK matches from, and I've heard the Raw one in particular is really awesome. So it's on my list. But there's a lot of wrestling out there, and like I said, I wasn't really watching closely during that time, so I didn't see that. But as far as then they kind of go more into like I liked how they worked in like a lot of like the cool like triple some just neat things with the three guys, like the Michaels hitting a baseball slide into Benoit, who knocks into Triple H, and then following with a moonsault on them both. And
Yes.
then go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to say that moonsault, they called Shawn Michaels Mr. WrestleMania, but he, this is going to be a terrible joke, but I'm going with it anyway. He maybe should be called Mr. Moonsault at WrestleMania because that is what he does. He does moonsaults
He does love the moonsaults, there's no
at WrestleMania.
question
I
about that.
love it. I love it. And you know it's coming. You know you're like, when is he going to do it? And it's always awesome. That was a great match.
The other one I liked, I mean, there were a couple others, but another one I really liked was Benoit getting stuck in the Trio of Woe, and then Triple H just sending Michaels into him with a really hard Irish whip. I mean, it just looked really good, looked really painful, just really, cool, cool things of, guys getting sent to the other guys and bumping and, knocking all around. It was good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a wrestling match. This was 7 years ago, which seems crazy to think about. For some reason, I don't see it as that long ago, but it just is. And it's a whole different wrestling world. People are applauding the bridges out of pinfalls. There's like reversals and counters, and they're cutting a pace that like just really doesn't exist in today's main event. And it's amazing to see the crowd react to any kind of like holder sequence that they especially at the starting when they're trading waist lock reversals and everything like that, and it's just like a testament to how different it was then to it is to what it is now, which is what I always kind of draw comparisons to. It's what's going on now and what was going on then.
Sure.
It's just a whole different world.
And this was kind of like the peak of sort of, I guess, a movement away from a lot of like the really heavy brawling style that, kind of came, was in the Attitude Era. I mean, they do outside stuff here, and they, it's not like there's no brawling, and, actually both Triple H and Michaels end up being really bloody, and they do table stuff and everything, but yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there was sort of a movement from, I guess probably 02 onward into sometime in the, maybe two, maybe 06, 07. I'm not sure if I can pinpoint an exact time where, like, yeah, it was really, kind of the basic, wrestling itself was kind of, sort of restored, kind of back from, the more heavy brawling style and all that. And I maybe that's just like a natural cycle in wrestling where, you kind of go back and forth just depending on, what works or what seems to be working at the time.
Well, what I see it as is like, I don't know if you read comics at all, but it's almost like I can see a comparison there where you build something up and then you have to break it down again to kind of start all over. So if, say, Wolverine has become too powerful over too many books because the stories that they're taking him in have him, you know, like his entire body being disintegrated, but he's still regenerating or whatever. And, you know, that's getting kind of too out there. And then it's like, oh, okay, now we got to bring it back and start again. Whereas that this style of wrestling kind of continued on after that brawling period in that, you know, in 02 and whatever. This style of wrestling continued up until like 2008 or 2007, 2008, where now it's like the PG era where it's kind of been broken down again. And now there's, you know, you're not going to see a match end with three Stone Cold Stunners or, you know, however many table spots or whatever. It's a different style.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they'll still do, you know, kind of the big moves and, you know, and kicking out, you know, a few times and stuff like that. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's interesting how the styles kind of, you know, go back and forth depending on the era. And obviously it depends a lot on the talent too. I mean, you know, obviously the, you know, and, you know, quite frankly, we've just, you know, there are fewer and fewer, you know, the awesome professional wrestlers in the sense of, like, you know, being really great storytellers. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of really athletic guys and a lot of guys who, you know, but as far as, like, you know, being both, like, awesome at technical wrestling and high flying and all that different things and having, like, the experience of having worked in Japan and Mexico, like Benoit did, and, you know, Jericho. I mean, obviously there's fewer and fewer of those guys, you know, and they're getting older, retiring. Obviously Michaels has retired, you know, Triple H, you know, rumored to maybe be retiring soon and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's obviously, it's going to be interesting to see how the style evolves when there's guys who, you know, really only know the basic WWE way of doing it and, you know, can't really bring a lot of outside influences in.
Yeah, we're definitely, like, not to get too off the rails here with this discussion, but we're definitely now entering a time where this is going to be, we're starting to enter, like, a first cycle of guys who really have only had experience within the WWE system, as far as I can guess.
Yeah.
You know, like, starting from 2002, where Cena and Orton and then Batista eventually debuted, those guys, you know, spent a little bit of time in other, like, developmental kind of, like, places. But generally, you're getting mostly a roster of guys right now that haven't had those years and years of experience before even reaching the WWE. Like,
exactly.
I think Jericho definitely put it best when he talks about how it took him however many years. I can't even remember how many years it took him to get to WWE. And, you know, some people would argue that he wasn't even at his best until the past few years. So,
right, yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see where they can go from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was 8 or 9 years that, you know, he took. And there's guys, obviously, who are, you know, only really a couple years. And you know, and in small level or in, you know, Florida training. But, yeah. But back to the match itself. We did get a little bit of a tangent, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to, like, parlay this into something I know you wanted to talk about, which was Brett and Benoit being kind of these problematic figures in pro wrestling, and how, like, the way I saw it was that these guys, it took them years to get to the top.
Yeah.
You know, like, Brett and Benoit both came from different places, and once they got to the WWE, it still took them many years after that. It took Benoit, I think, a little bit less because of his WCW time. But it was like this kind of thing where these guys took this much time to get here and build themselves up, and they came from not just, you know, within our weird machine, but there was this other, like, victory where they were both these technical wrestlers, these smaller guys, and you knew these that there's this, like, widely accepted knowledge that Vince McMahon prefers big, muscle-bound kind of guys. Or if, like, yeah. So, like, Benoit, Brett, smaller technical wrestlers. And so when, like, a guy like that wins, you feel like there's, like, a bigger victory happening than just in the ring. There's,
yeah.
Like, you know, this, like, other thing going on behind the scenes where it means more than, hey, they won the belt. It was like, hey, they are, like, changing the general idea of what WWE wants.
Yeah. And their style of wrestling is winning, you know, the style that we like, you know, as smart fans or whatever you, whatever term you want to use, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, interesting. Yeah. I was just doing the math and, it took, Brett about eight and a half years to, from his debut to become champion, and from Benoit's WCW debut in 95. I guess he did have a mini thing in 93, but basically 95. It all, you know, was also, you know, just 8.5, you know, 9 years before he became champion. Obviously, he had to go to the different company, but as far as being on the national stage, you know, they basically had about the same amount of time. And you know, yeah, I mean, I think the comparison between, you know, WrestleMania 10 and WrestleMania 20, I mean, both being in the Garden, both, and, you know, that was obviously Bret's second reign, but it was kind of like, you know, the first one he was sort of, you know, cast aside and, like, was, like, made to look kind of foolish and, you know, yeah. It made it clear that he wasn't really the guy. And the second time, you know, it was like, okay, now you're the guy. Now, you know, we're putting our, you know, it on your back and, mm-hmm. and all of that, you know. And it was kind of like, both instances, it was kind of like a mini restoration of good old classic old style wrestling. You know, at least yeah. maybe that's not real, but that's the perception of it anyway. over sports entertainment
in wrestling. So
yeah, but both of course didn't last. You know, Benoit yeah. was champion for 5-6 months, and Bret wasn't champion for much longer. And then obviously they went to Diesel after that, and you know, and then they went to the young generation with Orton, and you know, and basically back to Triple H, and then later Batista and Cena. So you know, it's just interesting how those moments parallel. And of course, you know, the other issue about being problematic is because, you know, obviously they can't celebrate Benoit's win. You know, it's like they can't really celebrate this match in this period like they probably would like to, being the 20th anniversary of WrestleMania, because of what Benoit did. And mm-hmm. for years, of you know, that isn't the case now, but for years, obviously, they couldn't really celebrate Bret's great moments because of, you know, how he left, you know, in Montreal, and, you know, the bitterness he had with WWE for a long time. Now, obviously, that's changed now, but, you know, just sort of like, you know, both these guys, you know, were like, you know, and Benoit obviously always will be, were, you know, and for very different reasons, were company pariahs.
Makes you wonder what will happen at WrestleMania 30.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe they shouldn't go with the technical, you know, Marvel at, you know, maybe not Daniel Bryan. Maybe.
Yeah, Bryan Danielson. Sorry, yeah. Man.
So,
yeah. I can be here.
Yeah, we don't think you're going to do anything bad, Daniel, but just in case, you know, we'll go with you at SummerSlam instead, maybe, you know. So, as far as, you know, kind of more, you know, about the match, I really, really liked, like, Triple H and Benoit have this, like, really epic struggle, like, at the top rope, where, you know, Benoit's kind of at the top days. Triple H keeps coming up, trying the superplex. Benoit keeps pounding on him and fighting him off. And then finally, like, Triple H is able to get him into the superplex. It's just really, you know, like, a really neat, like, one-minute sequence where they're really – it felt like a real battle, you know?
Yeah, and I love when that can happen in wrestling. Like, people how can I put this? I find it that you can get definitely more into the match when it seems logical. But I just get excited when wrestling looks like it's wrestling, you know, like it looks like there was a struggle or there was like logic to how they got from point A to point B. And not to like throw another company into this while I'm talking, while we're kind of sticking on this WrestleMania main event project. But I was just watching ROH recently. And there was like a particular match. It was Daniels against Eddie Edwards, and every sequence in the match felt like they were always competing to be the better wrestler or to gain the upper hand. And when things like that happen in wrestling, I just get excited. And much like that spot on the top rope, or many of the other things that happened in this match, I was excited to see that brand of wrestling kind of in the mainstream focus of the company.
Right. And I mean, and the cool thing about that, too, is like, obviously, we've seen guys fight over superplex like 1,000 times in wrestling. I mean, it's a pretty common thing. But just to be able to do it the way they did it and to give a different spin on it was just really, you know, on a basic thing was really cool. Also, you know, kind of after that, they do, you know, Benoit gets Triple H in the crossface for the first time. And they struggle with it. And then Michaels is able to break it up. You know, and this was kind of the point where I noticed that the crowd had been kind of on its hands for a while. That like really was like I remember this crowd really being hot for this match, and they certainly were for the last few minutes of the finish. But they definitely weren't as into it as I recalled, but then I remember that this was a 5-hour show, and so you know,
Yeah.
anyone would be burned out, no matter how great the match was,
Yeah.
after 5 hours. I remember watching it in a bar, and we were pretty excited for it. So I guess that I was, I'd extrapolated that in my mind, but.
Yeah. And this is funny. Like, this is the kind of match that when you watch it, you think, because of how great the wrestling is, you think that that is what everybody cares about. But it kind of isn't. Everyone's kind of just watching, and maybe you care about it, but
Yeah.
what they care most about is Chris Benoit, and they want him to win. So anytime he goes for a sharpshooter, they're begging for Triple H to tap out
Yeah.
or, tries to slap on a crossface or something. So that is where the focus is in this match, and that's where, yeah, people care.
Yeah, and they were invested in the certain, I mean, definitely in certain moves, but I mean, it was definitely the focus, of the fans. They wanted Benoit to win. They were happy when Benoit was doing well. They were obviously not happy when Triple H was doing well, and they were mildly unhappy when Shawn was doing
Yeah,
what was
kind
doing
of
well for
indifferent almost.
yeah.
Which it blows my mind to watch this again from 7 years ago and see someone get out cheered when Triple H and Shawn Michaels are in the ring. Like
Right.
you the it's weird to see because of how fresh in our memory that Triple H and Shawn Michaels are. They're two of the most like people love them right now.
Yeah.
So having them gone and then but to see this match where they're just hated or just like we only care about Chris Benoit, it's kind of funny to watch.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, also, it's a triple threat match, so it's sort of like, is it harder for the crowd to get invested in that when there's, I mean, there's two good guys. Yes, but there's not like it's not like a bad guy beating up on a good guy. It's like,
Right.
guys trading. I mean, there's a lot of the two guys in, one guy out kind of thing, and which is
Yeah.
fine. I mean, it was a good way to work it, but it
No
just.
easy choice. There's no like, if there's a bad guy and a good guy, you can choose if you want to boo the bad guy or cheer the bad guy or
Yeah. Well,
person.
yeah. I mean, and they were behind Benoit, but it wasn't like Benoit wasn't, being beaten up or it wasn't all Benoit's struggle. It was also, obviously Triple H and Michaels' struggle. So it's a different dynamic, and it's interesting to see at WrestleMania. And certainly the match worked fantastically, but just kind of looking back on that, it's, interesting how a triple threat match, the crowd response can be. But any other notable spots you can, I mean, before we talk sort of about the finish, which obviously is pretty epic, but.
Yeah, well, there's just a couple things. The German suplex is definitely like a focus of this match. Shawn spends a lot of this match trying to counter it. Like it takes or he does counter it, sorry. And he actually puts it on Benoit and gets incredible boos for it. He gets, heat for doing a German suplex on Chris Benoit, who then turns it around and hits three on Shawn Michaels. But then there's another spot where Shawn gets the slingshot into the corner and gets busted open on the ring post.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it live and being, and we, I was with a big group of friends and we all thought he got busted open hard way. We thought for sure, like, because he just popped up and he's already bleeding. We were just
Yeah.
like, the crowd, like, lets out this moan of, fear for him because he's just so bloody.
Yeah.
But I rewind it every time. And you, if you're watching close enough, on the way up, I think that's where it happens, where he kind of like makes this motion away from his head so fast, like you would never catch it if you're watching it live. And that kind of stuff is just so fascinating. And so, like, I feel like it's part of the magic kind of going away when you catch it. But it was just, it's weird finding talent in someone cutting themselves on the face on purpose. But
Right.
it's what I'm just like finding myself rewinding and rewinding and just kind of like watching in awe.
Yeah.
But he is covered in blood for the rest of the match.
Right. Yeah, that definitely is a pretty epic moment. And also the I liked when of course Benoit gets the crossface on him right after that, and he's like, like he's
Oh,
about to
yeah.
tap, and then Triple H comes from the side and grabs his hand and makes sure he won't tap. I really like that. That was pretty fun. And then
Yeah, I thought it was pretty fun, and like I remember really liking it. But it is kind of funny that like I could stop you from giving up just by like holding your hand or something.
right,
Which
exactly,
giving
yes.
up just kind of be like, I give up. Like, no, you
Yeah.
don't. Like,
You
stop for
have to
now.
tap your hand,
Yeah.
You can't give up unless you tap your hand.
Yeah. But it's a really good visual and really, really cool kind of like putting over kind of like the danger of the crossface, which gets, you know, kind of attempted every other second, especially at the start. There's a few changes.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely goes after that, but obviously it's his main offensive weapon, so makes sense. Then, you know, kind of get to where Benoit and Triple H are up on the announce tables, and Benoit teases a German, and then Triple H teases a pedigree, and then Michaels comes in, and then he and Triple H give each other kind of a look, and they double suplex Benoit through the table. You know, he crashes down pretty good.
Yeah. Oh man, he gets flattened right out. And I thought this whether it was meant to do it this way, it must have been, but because I don't know. But it seemed like an incredible way to get Benoit even more over and get the crowd even more behind him to have, you know, Shawn Michaels and Triple H just be like, well, we're just going to resort to our old habits and team up again and take him out. And then it's all about us again, who I guess the crowd is clearly not interested in. I don't know what Shawn Michaels and Triple H had to do to get the crowd so uninterested in a guy who just came back after, you know, 5 years or 4 years of not being there. But yeah, there was Let's Go Benoit chants when it was Triple H and Shawn Michaels going out in the ring. So
yeah,
people
yeah.
were just wanting Benoit so badly. And that was, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And then you got a really cool moment right afterward where Shawn, he's bloody in the ring, and then he just like taunts Triple H to come on, and like Triple H is just kind of like stunned. And it's like really like, wow, like, ooh, that's really cool. I'd kind of forgotten about that. And then it's sort of like the crowd is like, oh, you know, it's like they're pretty indifferent to the whole thing. They, and they sort of do an exchange in the ring, trading chops and punches. And then, Triple H is, you know, does a huge bump on an Irish whip into the corner and then knocks out a cameraman. And then, Michael sends him to the ring post and busts him open, and you know they're both pretty bloody at this point.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten how bad it was.
Yeah, Triple H. I always wonder because I've never been covered in my own blood.
No,
that's pretty good. That's a good thing to.
Yeah.
Know.
But, actually, I have. Once when I was seven, I my cousin and I were throwing little stones at each other, which was a smart thing to do, and. And then he threw one. And we were like on like both two sides of like this little porch type thing.
Okay.
And
did
then,
okay, sorry, keep going.
And then he threw one, and it cut me in the forehead, and like I was bleeding all over. Like and it wasn't like they ended up like taking me to the emergency room, or whatever. And it was like two stitches, so it was like nothing, but it was so much blood. You know, it was like, you know, and you know the adults weren't there to see it happen, so they were you know like thought it was much worse or whatever. So
yeah.
I remember crying and being you know and just like I remember there was so much blood. It was crazy. So you know, I guess I do have that experience.
Did the blood enhance your stone throwing fight?
It possibly did. Yeah, I think Dave Meltzer gave it 4.5 stars. So, you know.
Without the blood, we needed the blood for it.
Yeah, it would have been maybe 3, 3.25. But, you know, so,
but all I was gonna say was that Triple H kind of started. I wonder, but like Hogan and Triple H, and maybe it's just them that are in my mind. They kind of breathe funnier when they have blood kind of on their, like running down their face. They start like flapping their lips and puffing through. Like it's always like, I don't know. It always makes me laugh when I probably shouldn't be laughing.
That too. Yeah. He had like a really goofy expression. Like it almost felt like he was doing that to make the blood come out more.
Yeah. Like he was like pumping it out with his flappy gums or something.
Yeah, I don't know if that helps or what. I mean, I've never intentionally tried to get it out of my head. It's just it was an accident the one time. So
it's the magic of wrestling.
the puffy lips, and because I feel like I feel like I've seen other guys do that. Like, yeah, you're right. Hogan definitely does it. Like,
definitely.
I feel like I've seen guys breathe like that and do that. So there must be something to it. I don't know.
Must just be like keeping it out of your mouth. I don't know.
That might be. Yeah, that could be it too. You know. So. Yeah, but yeah, at that point, you know, we have the Triple H kind of manages to get the pedigree out of nowhere on Shawn in the middle of the ring, and then Triple H struggles, and then finally comes over to the cover, and then Benoit dives in the last second to like you know the big reaction, you know, and then Benoit and Triple H do, you know, kind of go out in the ring. Triple H tries the pedigree, which is reversed into the sharpshooter, and they do a huge struggle, which Triple H tries to stretch out for the ropes and almost gets there, but Benoit pulls him back. And then finally, Michaels breaks it up with a, you know, big super kick out of nowhere, which was
running
also really cool. Yeah, yeah. Also very cool.
Yeah, I marked out on my couch just by myself on my laptop when that happened.
Yeah.
I forgot it entirely happened, and he comes in, like, I think, if I remember right, kind of out of frame, like, so you don't really see him. It's just all of a sudden like a full speed Johnny Cage kick to your face, and you just lose your, you know. Yeah, sorry, that was just, I just got so excited for it.
It was cool, yeah. And then he crawls right over to Benoit, then gets two, and then he sets up another one, super kick. But then Benoit ends up backdropping him over the rope, and Triple H tries the pedigree, and then they but then Benoit's able to lock into the crossface, and then we have Triple H trying to grab the rope and crawling over, and he struggles through it for quite a long time, and then finally, really cool, Benoit like is basically rolls backward and then rolls him over to the other side of the ring where he, you know, can't get to the ropes, and then finally it takes a while, but he finally taps out. I remember like at that moment just being like, you know, tap tap tap, you know,
yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
basically screaming to, you know, I had had a few beverages at the time, so I was pretty you know, I was enjoying myself, but you know, I remember just being really, really happy, you know,
and I
was, you know, it's not like I was a kid. I was a 25-year-old man. So, you know, so I
was a grown man screaming tap in a bar.
I was screaming tap in a bar and but with a bunch of people I didn't know. And we were all very excited and high-fiving each other when it happened. Nice. So, you know.
One thing I'll say about that finish is Triple H, I'm going to call it a performance because – him selling the crossface for that long in like a bunch of different ways. Like if you're watching, he gets it on first and he's kind of fading and he's fading and he's fading.
Yeah.
And he kind of gets himself pumped up to get out of it. And they do that big roll where you think he's going to roll himself out of it. But when Benoit holds on and the crowd erupts, he starts to panic. Cause he knows he's screwed until he finally taps out. And it's, I don't know. Like this match made me kind of realize how much like, when you hate Triple H, you don't really realize, you know, how much he's when he's in a submission move or something, like when Benoit had him in the sharpshooter earlier, and he is just like flailing his head around like he's headbanging or something. You realize he's making you want him to tap out so bad.
Yeah.
You're thinking, like, or screaming in a bar is tap.
Yeah.
And I thought the finish was really awesome.
Yeah, he was awesome this match, no question. And yeah, it made me appreciate some of the little things that he does that maybe I, you know, overlooked before, you know, during even, you know, maybe during these years when, you know, he kind of slowed down after his comeback. Kind of 2003 he was really pudgy and you know, and had, you know, a number of bad pay-per-view matches, and I certainly wasn't a big fan, you know, of that, but you know, he had started to come out of that this year, in 2004, and, you know, and started to, you know, and I think, you know, started to be stronger in the ring where it kind of went back a little bit to the old Triple H a bit. He also had the Swank white boots, which he never...
Yes.
What's that?
I'm a big fan of the white boots.
Yeah,
sorry,
I love the white boots. Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah.
I, like, perk up when we start talking about, like, ring gear, and it's such a weird thing to get so excited about. At WrestleMania, whenever a guy comes out with like a sweet new jacket or like new tights or something, you know it's gonna happen. It'll happen this year. I get really excited in a weird way that kind of concerns myself. But the white boots and Shawn's—he was wearing these throughout the entire run. But the red like Heartbreak Kid style tights and not the kind of like leather pants he wore later in his run.
Right.
But like just the aesthetic of this match, I really like the look of it. It just looks nice with the screen in the background as well when they're kind of setting up the match.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about it looked really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then the post-match celebration here, which you know, also a little bit comparable to the WrestleMania 10 one because, you know, in 10 it was kind of the whole babyface locker room. In this one it was just Eddie, but it was just, you know, kind of a big thing where they were the two champions and, you know, they finally both obviously realized their dream and all of that. And I'm thankful that the celebration with the family didn't make the DVD. I've seen pictures of it, but maybe there's a bonus thing, but they don't show it at the end of the match. So that would be, that would not be fun to watch. That would still be pretty hard to watch.
Not to take that too much further, but I got Oh man, choked up isn't the right word because I wasn't choked up, but like I was a little bit startled because I forgot that Eddie came out at the end when I rewatched it.
Okay.
Because I think when I watched it earlier, I didn't kind of watch the celebration, but I did this time. And the way it comes out is he is just suddenly in the ring.
Right.
It's like he just appears there, and it's kind of weird. I was like, oh my God, it's Eddie Guerrero,
Yeah.
and I was kind of like taken aback. So if then all of a sudden like photos and I don't know a celebration with his family that he ends up murdering came up, I would probably, I don't even know. I don't even know what would happen. I would slam my laptop shut and just go crawl into bed.
Yeah, yes.
And that's probably true.
Yes. So is there anything else you can anything else you can recall about this match or about the show in general? It's just it's a really interesting. I mean, they're really in. It struck me, I was watching the kind of the video package afterward, and they're really in between eras here. I mean, they're really like kind of have their foot sort of in both, you know?
Yeah, well, 2005, the next pay-per-view is when Batista and Cena both won their first world titles. So you can
Right.
see right there is how it was kind of like, yeah, like kind of like a middle ground for eras right there.
Right, and this is the end of Goldberg in wrestling. It's at least in U.S. wrestling in WWE. It's the end of The Rock in WWE. Active wrestling. It was one of Foley's. He had come back, but I mean,
Yeah.
he. It was. I think Austin left after this for a long time. Obviously, Lesnar's last match too. Not
Big
that
change.
Lesnar. Yeah, not that Lesnar was really a big part of the last era, but he was obviously important at the end.
Yeah, very much so.
And of course Eddie and Benoit, who wouldn't just th both 3 years later would be dead, and just yeah, and a lot of interesting yeah, just an interesting transition. The old stars kind of were going away. It was the return of the Undertaker as the dead man,
Yep.
after the and kind of when he it He sort of set him up to, although the match with Kane did not reflect it, kind of, sort of introduced like a new, wrestling heavy Undertaker eventually, where,
Yeah.
he really became, a strong wrestler and had a lot of great matches, in the last, few years of his career. So.
Yep, it's a very kind of on the fence era, as you
Yeah.
mentioned.
Right. Yeah.
It's incredible all the names that you listed that were are gone now or were leaving then or whatever. It seems like a pretty definite almost end to an era when you consider WrestleMania 21 and all of the beginnings it created.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a fascinating time.
Definitely, definitely. And and obviously, as we've said, it's a great match, unless you can't watch Benoit, understandably, it's a must see, one of probably top five WrestleMania main events of all time, I would say.
It's
So.
an awesome match. It's an awesome moment that is obviously tarnished by a horrible, horrible tragedy that I wish, even for selfish reasons, that it didn't happen. Like, there's obvious reasons why you wish something like that wouldn't happen, but in like my most selfish moment, I'm sad that that happened, because when Benoit and Eddie died, like kind of a style of wrestling that will almost certainly never exist in the mainstream again did as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and
It's
not just like the style, but like, I don't know, like a mindset, like an approach to wrestling, like a and like a I don't know, like a belief in, is it like a belief in wrestlers almost? Like a belief, like a I don't know, I felt like, and this is silly, but I felt like I like almost like I not like I knew Chris Benoit, but like I like you know like I knew that he was a good person, like I knew that he was like a warrior and a champion, and like that stuff, and Eddie did it to a degree too, and
Yeah.
obviously, with what Benoit proved is, we don't know them, and we, unless you, unless you have a personal relationship with a wrestler, which most fans obviously don't, you don't know them, and so, they're, you can know a lot about them maybe, but you'll never, you just, and it's obviously, it's, I'm sure even Benoit's friends obviously, didn't know that was going to happen. So, and had no idea that he was capable of it. Even the ones who knew he had some issues. So.
Yeah. It's yeah, it's definitely like a an awful, awful thing. And I will say that it's for the better that we have the style of wrestling or the, approach to wrestling that we do now. Just kind of as it's happening in a lot of sports where, you know, head injuries and concussions are a big issue. Like, when you don't know the effects of a simple, like, back bump, like, I don't know a ton about this, so I won't talk about it like I'm an authority on or anything, but you have to question, like, when guys, like, when you watch a Benoit match, he is hitting the mat harder than anyone else
right.
maybe ever did, and you're wondering, like, oh man, like, how he got maybe a lot of his, like, kind of mental issues through something like that. So it's good that it's a much safer product, for lack of a better word, or lack of a, like, insider word,
right?
Right now, and it's good for that. We don't want our wrestlers going around and murdering their families. That is not good. But when, if you were to treat it solely as a fan, which is tough to do when you're talking about this, a quality to wrestling, like you saw in this match, where there's, like, a crazy pace and a crazy work rate, is gone now.
Yeah.
I won't say that. I'm not one of the people who believes that wrestling doesn't exist in WWE right now, because it does. It's just this, what that was, is kind of gone now.
Right. I know. That's definitely true. And you're right. I think it is largely for the better it's all for the better that the style has been toned down. And, you know, you see Benoit just, you know, hitting things so hard and, you know, executing so hard and hitting all those German suplexes and taking all that on his neck. And you're right. You just wonder what the effects of that, not only on him, but on a lot of guys, you know, not,
yeah.
I mean, who have had memory problems or who, you know, have had, or just, you know, pain and suffering they have to live with all their lives from, you know, for what they do. So yeah, it's, you know, it is definitely good for the better for wrestling, for it to be as safe and as, you know, as safe as possible. And,
yeah.
You know, and even if that makes it a little bit less exciting, so be it. You know, it's more important, obviously, these guys be, you know, be healthy and be safe,
yeah.
and, you know, be able to live, you know, lives where they can, you know, bend down and, you know, and walk and, you know, and be happy
yeah.
and healthy. So, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not, yeah. And that's why I kind of, like, meant it was like I'm being completely selfish when I talk about that. Just as a total fan and watching the kind of wrestling that is the most entertaining to me. But when, if there's a way that they can do it, which they're doing right now, where you can change the focus of the matches and you can change the focus of the storylines to highlight different things instead of the, like, furious bumping and the, I know, like incredible work rate or whatever, then I'm obviously fine with that. And it's just the way it's got to be, for the sake of humanity, we will say.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also think we should probably not end this on the most gloomy notes that we could ever leave it on. We just, once you get start talking about Chris Benoit and what happened, like, it's hard to just be like, and now some fluff that we can talk about. But
I could tell you a joke.
I would love a joke right now.
Okay. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
To.
To who?
No, to whom.
To whom?
Yeah, it's a grammar joke. You, to whom instead of to who, you know? So.
Okay, wait. Just so I can get one in.
Okay.
I also have a good knock-knock joke.
Okay.
You start.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
I don't know.
That's also the joke.
Okay.
Being a Chris Benoit wrestling podcast with two knock-knock jokes.
Exactly. All right, well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. And if you have any knock knock jokes, you can, you know, post them in the comments on this. And keep watching out for our WrestleMania podcast and all the other great stuff we have at Fair to Flair. So thanks a lot. Goodbye.